My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
8 o'clock hour here on 105.3 The Fan. It is Sean and RJ. Sean is out. He is back tomorrow. Bobby Roberto Belt. Here alongside, as always.
I had a listener ask me the other day. They're like, "Is your name actually Roberto?"
Oh no,
I was like, "No, it's Robert." But they thought because Sean said it so often that they thought my name was Roberto now.
Oh
no,
baby,
it's Robert.
It is Robert. I like Roberto.
I'm every morning when Chop passes me in the hallway when I first walk in, he goes Robert every single time.
Robert every time. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
Rangers lose 7-6 to the New York Mets in a game they led 6-2 after, what, six innings?
Yeah.
Five innings.
After five innings, they were up 6-2, and then just, it was
Is
bit
it?
By bit. We bit? Call that incrementalism.
Yes, bit by bit. Chuck Cooperstein coming up at 8:20, below the belt at 8:40. Let's get into some MLB stories. Obviously, the big story of the day in Major League Baseball, the great Willie Mays passed away last night around 8:30, 8:45.
Yeah.
At least that's what the news broke. Tremendously sad. He was such a wonderful player. I never got to see him play, but do y'all remember those the black and white home run derbies in like the 90s they would air?
Mm-hmm.
They were like the reruns of these 1950s and 60s home run derbies. They did it at some field that looked like Wrigley Field, but it wasn't. It had ivy, brick wall, and everything like that.
Yep.
And you would get Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle and Ted. All these stars showed up for this thing. It'd be the equivalent of like just mega stars of today, of Seager and Otani and Judge and all these guys all participating in this weekly home run derby. The guys didn't make any money back then. Oh, here's $500 if you win.
Yeah, and they would have those, like, almost felt like scripted movie set interviews off to the side after they would hit. Yeah, and it's just like, it felt like the backdrop, and maybe it was, the backdrop looked like it was a TV set. It didn't even look like they were really where they were standing.
In the booth, yeah. And then, like, it would be, you played nine innings, you get three outs an inning, and they called strikes. If you you didn't swing and the pitch was over the plate, strike, one out. Like that, it was cutthroat,
pitches.
Man. No, it was cutthroat. And it was cool. Like I always enjoyed watching those. Willie Mays is always on those a lot. I mean, I saw him a lot. Just at a time where, baseball was the number one sport in the world at the time. He played first couple years of his career in New York alongside Mickey Mantle, and that was like the rivalry is those two guys. And then they moved to San Francisco, and he became a legend out there after a while. after you mentioned that there was when he first got
The rivalry was Mickey Mantle in New York. The rivalry in San Francisco was like zoning commissioners, I guess, or something, or people who landlords.
Yeah,
that was what he ran into in San Francisco.
And you know, the incredibly sad part is that you know Major League Baseball tomorrow has their game in Birmingham at an old Negro League stadium that he played at in the Rickwood Field, where the Birmingham Black Barons played. And now he won't get to see. He won't even get to see it on TV. I mean, he was supposed to be at the game. Then he announced this week that he was not going to be able to make it. I think we know why now. He was obviously in failing health, and that's. I mean, just another sad aspect of the story.
Yeah, I mean,
he's an all-time great.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe the greatest.
Lived an incredibly full life, and like you mentioned, definitely went through some struggles and had a more difficult time than you would think a national superstar like Willie Mays would have, in terms of just because of the era that he came up with and a lot of the racially charged division that existed. Zero bitterness in old age at all about it. Like in that documentary we talked about, he talked about being young and being angry at times and upset, but he had come to a place of complete peace. Just a great individual. One of the probably, what, three people in existence who have ever softened the heart of Barry Bonds. I mean, that's the type of person that he was.
He came at 17 years old in 1948. He played for the Birmingham Black Barons. That was the year after Jackie Robinson made his debut. So he played 13 games for them. And I didn't realize this until recently, where MLB added the Negro League stats. I didn't realize that they had played so few games. I thought they played a normal 160-game schedule. I didn't realize they played schedules in the 60s, and they barnstormed to make some cash the rest of the year. But so he played just 13 games that year. Then he gets signed by the Giants, is in their minor league system for a couple of seasons. Then he debuts in 1951, and then he goes to war. So at 20 years old, he plays. At 21 years old, he plays 34 games and then goes off to war. Misses the entire next season, so he missed about a year and a half. And then his career just really took off from there. And he wins the MVP in 1954, his first year back from service.
One of the notes I had discovered watching Willie Mays' documentary last year was, remember Ed Montague, the umpire, the Major League Baseball umpire?
I do.
His dad was the scout that found Willie and gave him a $4,000 contract to come play for the Giants.
No kidding.
Yep.
Wow. I mean, he was 17 when he was playing for the Black Barons in 1948.
Paved the way for guys like Luka Doncic, teenagers who are kicking everybody's ass.
There you go. MLB's making a mistake with this, I believe. Tell us about this
dude,
neutral
this
site.
This is something that I had heard nothing about this. This was something that a Reddit user had spotted it while reading an article and posted it. It was like, hold on, what's happening here? And maybe there's been discussion about this and I've just missed it. But I know when I asked you and Sean about it during a break, you guys hadn't heard anything about it. So there was an article over in the Las Vegas Review-Journal late last week that said Vegas Athletics ballpark may benefit if MLB alters playoff format. It's like, okay, what would that have to do with anything? And so the story says language in the Oakland Athletics Las Vegas draft non-relocation agreement includes safeguards in the event Major League Baseball chooses to alter its playoff format. Mark Arnold, special counsel of the Las Vegas Stadium Authority, said during a May 18th meeting, this just came out, by the way. It was said on May 18th, but it just got covered. During a May 18th meeting of the board of directors, that MLB is requiring teams' non-relocation agreements to include a section that leaves the option open for teams to play playoff games at a single host site. He said it could be possible for the MLB to go to some model that is more like the Super Bowl, if you will, where some playoff games are played in a location that is not necessarily the home stadium of any of the teams. So the MLB is basically trying to, you know, we talked about this where in Farmers Branch, where I had grown up, that years ago they had put in a rule about a certain minimum amount of square footage for the size of new homes that were built. Because slowly over time, they wanted bigger and bigger houses to replace the ones that were already in place. So this seems like a similar incremental push from MLB. Like, okay, we're going to need to start, when we get the opportunity for some of these agreements, we need to start sliding language in that says you may not be hosting a playoff game. And I don't know if that's they want to avoid. Maybe this is influenced by, do they want a Super Bowl-like atmosphere? Or is it a Tampa Bay Rays situation where are the Rays struggling to sell out a playoff game? Well, we're not doing that because we'll sell out a playoff game then in Houston. If Houston's not playing, we'll go send Tampa to Houston as a neutral site location to play these games. But I find it fascinating that the city of Las Vegas and these interactions that they're having with MLB, they're coming away with the impression that Major League Baseball would at least like to leave open the possibility in the future of Super Bowl-like neutral site playoff games, which I think would be a massively stupid decision.
If they want to do the World Series in a neutral site, I think we can get down with that. The playoffs, no. Like, you've earned the right to play at home to get to the finals. You know, like, that to me is important. Because especially as the calendar gets closer to November, I mean, the weather does get really crappy in some of those northern cities. So do you want rainouts? Do you want bad weather? I have no problem with the idea that they want the most important games to be played in perfect conditions. And an indoor in the globe or Houston or Vegas or whatever would be that. Because they're temperature controlled. But if Major League Baseball thinks that the Tampa Bay Rays would be able to play a game in Houston if the Astros aren't playing in the playoffs and they're going to sell out, they're mistaken. Nobody's going to go watch. All right, we have 8 million people here. If the Tampa Bay Rays played a playoff game in the globe and the Rangers were not involved and they were playing just the Twins, are they getting 40,000 there?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, if, you know, 20 years from now, if they do this every year and people know about it, it's just a thing, then maybe.
Well, and
first year, I don't think there's a chance.
What if it's, and maybe this is their thought process, because again, it's very vague. There's nothing, and when there were people who reached out to MLB for comments on it, like the Las Vegas Review-Journal, they did not get a lot of clarity from Major League Baseball. They did talk to the A's president, Dave Cavall, and he said he's not aware of pending plans for MLB to change the league's current playoff system. But if that ever happened, he did acknowledge, well, let's operate under the assumption that that could happen, okay? If it does, then Vegas would benefit, because Vegas would become one of the target host sites for that type of playoff game. So you guys wouldn't even have to worry about it. That would be one of the areas. So Cavall is already talking about this as something where, look, I don't know if they're going to make the change, but let's operate under the assumption they do. Like, this is a team president saying that this is something that we at least can have the discussion of what would happen if MLB went this way. And that it's something that MLB is trying to get put into relocation agreements. And so I think maybe the idea is those, like the series the Rangers played against the Rays, the 3-game wild card, maybe they think that one should be a neutral site.
Yeah.
The wild card, that initial wild card round should be a neutral site. And then when you get into the rest of the playoffs, then it gets back to them. But to me, I've been to NFL playoff atmosphere. I've been to playoff games in all sports, NFL, NHL, NBA, MLB. It is not even close the intensity of an MLB playoff atmosphere for me compared to the other three sports. I think MLB playoff home atmosphere is absolutely electric. And hockey's probably the closest one that I felt. But, man, if you were to take that away, the you know, Chuck Morgan coming on the PA and saying, get ready, Rangers fans. In 30 seconds, you'll be going live. Like, those same sort of instructions they give to every home crowd for the, hey, let's do the towel wave. Mm-hmm. There's just...
There's a level. It was great. It would be the Globe was great this year. The old Globe I thought was better in 2011. But
yes, I agree. There's still a sterile nature about the new one. It's a little museum like, but the MLB playoff atmosphere is as close to replicating the intensity of like college football whiteout atmosphere.
Yeah, it would be a miss. Now, you know, Franklin Injury Attorneys fan text 877-881-1053. Random Stadium World Series will be badass. All rounds but World Series could be hosted by the home team. Neutral site World Series, you know, you could do that. Maybe Game 7 of a World Series, you would put in the new, who knows, right? Neutral site, whatever.
Teams are willing to
travel.
Are teams willing to? And I guess I don't know how does the MLB revenue share work in terms of, would they?
I don't know.
Like, the home team, I'm assuming, collects all of that gate stuff that they get for playoff games. I'm assuming they don't have to split any of their playoff revenue with
anybody. They may have to split it with the road team, but not the rest of the league.
Yeah. And so, I mean, does that change if they, like if you're at a neutral site, do you end up losing certain revenue benefits? Like, are owners going to be okay with that? I mean, it doesn't sound like Dave Cavall was worried about it. Of course, the A's don't have to worry about playing in the playoffs.
No, they don't. Not right now, they don't. I don't like it. I would not be a fan if this was the new normal, that's for sure. They're gonna try to find a way to do it, though. Rob Manfred loves tinkering.
Dude.
That's the thing. He loves tinkering.
Maybe the worst thing that could have happened was
all those things
the success
work.
Of all his tinkering, because then it empowers him to, all right, let's do some more.
Yep, because attendance is through the roof right now. So, highest attended weekend in 15 years they just had.
So our pitching arm injuries.
Yeah, they are. There's no doubt about that one. All right, it is Sean and RJ here on this hump day edition.
Hump day.
Of 105.3 The Fan. The great Chuck Cooperstein. A little bow on the Mavericks season coming up next year on 105 through The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The Gel Flex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the Gel Flex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
1 hour from now, the great Brett Boone will join the show. Talk a little Major League Baseball. We get in the Stanley Cup Finals coming up at 9 o'clock, and Below the Belt coming up at 8:40. But it is time for my good buddy, the great Chuck Cooperstein, voice of the Mavs, joining us here on 105.3 The Fan.
And what did the Galloway intro used to be? Coop.
Coop
in the loop
on the loose. Morning, Coop.
Morning, boys. How are you?
Good morning.
Doing well. I should be getting ready for a game 6, but that is not in the cards.
No. Either game two or game three, but for me, it was game two. That's the game that they will look back and certainly rue the moment. They knew they had to win at least once in Boston, and that was the game to go get because the Celtics basically were begging them to win that game, and they just weren't good enough to win it.
Did you come away from the series then thinking that Boston was clearly the better team, or did like you just kind of said, the Mavs had their chance and they didn't take advantage of the chance that they had?
I think Boston was definitely better. I don't think it was necessarily, as dominant as it's being made out nationally. Look, there were two home blowouts for the Celtics. There was one home blowout for the Mavericks, and there were two swing games, at either place, both of which went Boston's way. That again, very easily could have gone the Mavericks' way. So, I always thought it was going to be at least a 6-game series, and even more so probably a 7-game series, but hey, that's what happens. Boston is 80-21. That's one of the great seasons in the modern NBA. And all their metrics are such that suggest that they are not just a worthy champion, but even a historic champion. So, kudos to them. Mavericks shouldn't feel bad that, that it's over. Be happy for what you have, right? And what they had was an incredible run, and really starting from March 7th, not even just through the playoffs, but, go back to March 7th, and you look and you see what they did in that time, and you see the possibilities. And that's what's really cool, because you look at the Celtics, and ultimately that was a team that was nearly a decade in the making. And it still took a couple of very deft offseason moves by Brad Stevens to bring in both Porzingis and Drew Holiday to be able to seal the deal for them.
Coop, do you think the Mavericks look at this, like you just said there, I agree. I think it was closer than it's been made out nationally, because when you look at a lot of the peripheral statistics for the team over the course of that 5-game series for Boston, Boston was not playing nearly as efficiently or as well as they had been shown to do at a historic pace before that. Do you think Dallas is coming away from the series, Luka, Kyrie, Jason Kidd, people like that? Do you think they're coming away going, man, we missed an opportunity here because we really contained them offensively in a way that other teams hadn't been able to?
Yes. Look, if you had told me before the start of the series that the Celtics would never score more than 107 points in any game, and won the series, I would have been stunned. Would absolutely have been stunned, because there was no way that you could tell me that any team that had Luka, even in a somewhat compromised state, and Kyrie would not be able to score. And in fact, could not score 100 points in all four of their losses. Mm. Never was on the bingo card here, kids.
Nope.
I think if nothing else, the great thing about the playoffs and the finals in particular is, number one, it shows the flaws of your team. And it ultimately shows what you need to work on in order to get to the ultimate goal. And I think it's pretty clear here what the Mavericks need. And not that they're going to be able to achieve it, but the idea of having a third ball handling guard who can really create his own shot. Kind of like what they had 2 years ago with Spencer Dinwiddie, when Dinwiddie played the best that he's ever played in his life. I don't know that Dante Exum is that player, even though there are things that he does really well offensively that help them. But, I think you definitely need that type of player so that Luka and Kyrie can't be focused upon to the point that they were, and it completely bogged down the entire offense. So to me, that was the thing that most came out of the series. It's what your weaknesses are and how do you address it at the highest level. It may not necessarily matter in February, but it could very well matter in May and June.
Talking with Chuck Cooperstein, the radio voice of the Dallas Mavericks here on 105 Through the Fan. Coop, there was a lot made, of course, obviously, about the return of Kyrie to Boston and the atmosphere there. It was obviously a very loud and intense atmosphere, but this was something we had asked Mike Breen last week, and I was curious for your take on it. Was it really did you feel like it was a hostile environment for Kyrie, or did you feel like it was a intense environment, but it was no different than just an intense playoff environment the way playoff environments tend to be?
Oh, no, it was hostile. It was definitely hostile. I've never the only time that I've ever seen anything really addressed to one player the way this was when Kiki Vandeweghe back in the day used to come to the to Reunion Arena after, you know, he rejected playing for the Mavericks, you know, wound up playing with Denver, was a great player, and every time he touched the ball, at least certainly in the early years, as it moved on, it kind of became comical because everybody knew what the drill was. But in the crucible of the finals, it was real. And it not just in the building. Look, it's all over town. I mean, when you're selling T-shirts that say Kyrie sucks, I mean, it's real. I mean, no, I don't know that anybody literally has had to go through that.
Coop, was this a bad matchup physically for Kyrie? Like, were defensively, were they too strong, too big? Was it just a bad matchup for him?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, look, Kyrie just missed shots.
Yeah.
Man, he just missed shots they normally makes. But look, there's a reason why Jrue Holiday and Derrick White were second team All-NBA defensive players. They showed it. Their length and their strength, and their and again, just the ability of the Celtics. I think, you know, they talk about how they didn't switch. Celtics did a little more switching in this series, I think, than they did previously. But all of them have the ability to guard. And, you know, Kyrie couldn't quite get to the rim as easily as he could and did in some other series. In a lot of ways, this was like the Oklahoma City series for Kyrie, where, you know, the length of Oklahoma City, not necessarily strength, but the length really bothered him. You know, in the other two series against the Clippers and Minnesota, it really didn't. But give full credit. Hey, Derrick White, how did the Spurs give him up? I mean, seriously.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's exactly the guard they need to play with Wembanyama, right? How did they do that? And, you know, look, you know how Holiday wound up there. I mean, it just blame Milwaukee for that. I mean, what were they thinking? Why did they think that bringing in Damian Lillard to replace Jrue Holiday would work? You know, there's a reason why Jrue Holiday has now won two championships and is going to be on two Olympic teams. He's one of those guys that simply wins. He does whatever you need him to do for your team to win.
Coop, you know, this was obviously a big part of the consolation, I guess, a lot of people nationally seem to be trying to give the Mavericks was, hey, you know what? This is just the beginning. Luka's going to be back here. The Mavericks will get back here. He's got this in his future. And it reminds me back a little bit to, it felt like there was similar discussion about Devin Booker when the Suns lost. And since then, they've had trouble. What needs to occur this offseason, do you think, for the Mavericks to ensure they do get back there and that this isn't a defeating moment that prevents them from progressing?
Well, first off, there's nothing that ensures anything. Okay. Look at the Western Conference. I mean, look at the Western Conference and the quality of those teams. Number one, that made the playoffs. Number two, of those teams, how many of them went through injuries during the playoffs? And then look at teams like Houston and San Antonio that you know are going to get better. I mean, you know Wembanyama is going to get better, and they've got two picks in the top eight of the draft. I mean, they're definitely building something. And Houston is definitely building something and building a culture with Ime Udoka coaching them. They were far better this year than they were last year. And Utah, if they would ever stop letting go of the rope midway through the season, I mean, they are a highly competent team. Every game in the West, you play 52 games in the West, and really other than your games that you were playing against Portland, which also has two first-round picks this year, you know, those games are wars. And it does take a lot out of you, let alone what happens when you get to the playoffs where everything is matchup dependent. So there's nothing that ensures it. But, you know, the fact that, you know, you hope that Luka, you know, continues to improve. It can be, frankly, a little more consistent with his shooting. His three-point shooting clearly went awry at the end of the series, even though he had his best season ever shooting threes and shooting free throws. You know, hopefully he can, you know, stay in the shape that he was in really for the first two-thirds of the season. The fact that he was hurt as much as he was, I have to imagine, affected, you know, his workout schedule and just, you know, keeping himself in the manner that he was early in the year. I think that was probably a little bit hard for him. But You know, it's not like this team needs an entire overhaul. As I mentioned, they need a third ball handler. They can use probably somebody, you know, bigger who can stretch the floor as Lively and Gafford really are rollers. I mean, we saw Lively make that three in game four, and he may eventually get to that point. But I don't know that he's necessarily going to be there next year to where that's a reliable part of his offense. I mean, I just don't see him standing out there and taking 3 3-pointers a game next year. But I do think that it's something that he will ultimately work on. And by the time he's 24, and let's remember, he's just like 20 years and 125 days old, he'll get there. So there's not necessarily a lot. There certainly are things that can be improved upon, but the road next year is not going to be any less difficult than it was this year.
Coop, do we have any idea? Because Cuba, there's a report that Cuban's role is now completely changed from last year. Do we have any idea the new ownership, like how they want to approach spending and stuff in the offseason? Any kind of knowledge of that?
I think we don't know much. I know that they held a news briefing on Friday of game four, which was a very odd time in my eye for them to do that, maybe because they knew everybody else's attention would be focused elsewhere. But I haven't seen anything internally as far as, you know, staff and whatnot that would prevent them and prevent this group from spending whatever they feel they need to spend in order to win. And what they have done, it appears, is put their faith in Nico Harrison. And given what Nico's done, why wouldn't you put your faith in him? He's done a phenomenal job in building this thing and being creative. And let's face it, the Mavericks, you know, there have been a lot of times in these 3 years where you're wondering, like, how are they going to do this and what's going to happen? And, you know, all of a sudden you see stuff happening that, frankly, didn't always happen in the past. So, I think that they pretty much have put their faith in Nico to build the team as he sees the team. And at least, you know, if it means, you know, spending a little more money, I think they're willing to do that. You know, let's see if they're willing to go into the second apron. I don't know if that's your question or not. I don't know that they're necessarily willing to do that right now, and nor do I think that they really have to go do that right now. Mm-hmm. But I think the franchise is in a pretty good place.
66 days till college football. It's right around the corner.
66 days to college football, and believe it or not, like only about like 110 days until like the Mavericks play a preseason game again.
Short off season for Luka, and then the Olympics,
that's another thing too. You know, is this going to be the summer that Luka finally, you know, decides that he's not going to play as much as he wants to play, and his desire to play for his national team and win medals for his national team? It trumps just about everything, or certainly stands alongside trying to win an NBA championship for the Mavericks. You know how much he loves it, and generally speaking, I'm a fan of playing in the summertime. I think it's great, and I think, you know, especially with that type of competition, it forces you to be in really good shape. But listen, he took a beating. He took a beating, not just from April 21st to June 17th, but, you know, even leading into the second half of the season. There's a lot that went on here, and, you know, kudos to the Mavericks training staff for basically being able to get him out there every night and do what he did. But I have to believe that if it doesn't happen this summer, it will never happen. I mean, there's a qualifying tournament in Greece from July 2nd through the 7th. It's a killer draw. They may not make it anyway, even if he were there, because that's where, you know, obviously Greece is going to be the favorite to get there, and Giannis is going to play. So we'll see, but a little rest, a little R&R could do him a whole lot of good.
Yes, it could. Hey, brother, we appreciate it, man.
Thanks so much. Take care, guys.
All right, Chuck Cooperstein, enjoy the off season. Join us here on 105.3. What's coming up next in Below the Belt?
Why is Joe Burrow talking about football mortality? And should the NFL be concerned about it? That's next on 105 Through the Fan.
The great Bobby Belt.
You ruined the morning show.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not. I ruined the morning show, but did Baltimore just ruin their helmets?
Oh!
I don't know. They're getting a lot of positive reviews. We'll dive into more of that here in just a second. First, Joe Burrow. Pretty good quarterback, wouldn't you say?
RJ Tappy? I think I can make an easy case. He's the second best in the league.
What would be your biggest argument against Joe Burrow, just in general, as a player? What would you say, hey, if there's something I don't love about Joe Burrow, it might be this. What would it be?
He's fragile.
He is always hurt. So much so that it's started creeping into his head a little bit. Have you ever watched the show Scrubs, Chop?
No, I don't want no Scrubs.
No, the show Scrubs with Zach Braff. Yes. Not the TLC song. There was a line in one of the episodes where Dr. Cox blames himself for somebody getting sick and dying, and JD, the other doctor there, when he starts walking off, trying to walk off and leave his shift, he says, hey, as soon as you start blaming yourself for people's deaths, there's no coming back from that. And I think as soon as Joe Burrow or anybody else starts referencing light at the end of the tunnel, mm-hmm, or thinking about how fragile they are, I don't know that there's any coming back from that.
Bill Parcells would say that. He would say, the moment you think about retirement, you have to go.
Which, not that I think Joe Burrow's going to be awful next year because of this. I'm just saying this is now something that he'll have to deal with since it's clearly in the forefront of his mind. So Joe Burrow was out at Bengals minicamp last week, and the injuries have just piled up. He had torn ligaments in his right wrist at the end of 2023. We know he's had the knee injury. There have been other times he had that calf, you remember, and then I think he had a knee issue in training camp last year. So he was asked about the injuries piling up, and this is what he said. He said, whenever the injuries start to stack up, your football mortality kind of comes into the back of your mind. So that's definitely something I've thought about and something I have had to fight through.
Okay, so is he saying football mortality in the, like, when am I going to my career being over, or the football mortality in that I'm human and this is just part of my career where I'm just going to be hurt all the time?
No, I think it's more the mortality of, like,
the end is near.
We're talking about football, like, basically what he's saying to me is football death, like the end of football. And when the injuries start stacking up, you become aware of, hey, there's a limit on how long you can do this. And
right,
boy, I would be a little concerned.
He's not been paid, right?
Paid. Not anything that would make me not want to give Joe Burrow another contract or anything like that. But it would just make me a little bit like, man, he's acknowledging he's actively having to push back thoughts of, like basically disaster scenario thoughts in his head.
Dude, could you imagine being the Cincinnati Bengals and you were so bad for so long?
Yep.
And you fall back into Joe Burrow. He falls right into your lap.
Yep.
Into Joe Burrow, into the next Tom Brady, into Joe Cool, man, the guy who is a gamer, the only guy that has shown any consistency in being able to beat Patrick Mahomes. The only guy.
Burrowhead, they call it.
Stay healthy.
Yeah,
he may quit after one contract.
You end up getting the quarterback version of Terrell Davis, potentially.
God.
That would just be brutal for them.
Now, what an existence.
He says they're doing things to manage his injuries, doing different things to try and...
what, keep him off the field?
I mean, look, you got to a point. If he gets hurt this year, you're talking about him in a similar vein, I would think, in Cincinnati that you talk about Sean Lee in Dallas.
Sean Lee, Kawhi Leonard, something like that. Right? Somebody always hurt. Always Greg Oden, Bill Walton.
So just
he's Bill Walton.
Yeah.
He's always hurt.
Just the fact that this is in his head and he's actively thinking about it, I would just be a little concerned in Cincinnati. Not that there's anything like, well, we've got to move on from this guy. It's just I would be concerned that that's going to impact him and his thought process and his approach moving forward. Speaking of thought processes.
And I wonder if every player in the NFL, it's maybe not the quarterback position, but like, I'm sure like running backs all think about, I mean, because they're fully aware that this next carry could be their last, right?
Yeah, whereas quarterbacks, maybe they're not as aware of it, especially in the era of Brady, Rodgers, Manning, guys who are playing 40. Up to 40.
Yeah.
And whereas running back, you're Jimi Hendrix, you're Janis Joplin, you're in the 27 club.
God.
You know, that's where you end up going.
And Peyton, that is.
Dude, we explained this to you 2 weeks ago. Listen, the first time.
Thank you, Sean.
Man. He's spicy.
We've built
a, Hayden is spicy.
We have created a bitter employee
Yes,
here.
We have.
We took an innocent child and turned him into Carter Freeman, man. All right. Justin Fields is turning heads out there in Pittsburgh, baby.
Really?
Yeah.
I said it. He should start.
And by
he
that, I mean
starter.
They're turning their heads and vomiting on the sideline after watching him throw.
No, I was wrong. I didn't say that. Reports
out of Pittsburgh are that, and Justin Fields had a big-time fan, a big-time admirer in Ray Fittipaldo, who is a Steelers insider, Steelers reporter, and he had said, man, I thought that a lot of the issues were overblown, and, you know, he was going to come in here and this was going to be a good situation for him. Not that it still can't be, but he said, watching him in minicamp, man, it's worse than they said.
Really?
He said it's worse than people had presented. The accuracy issues. He says that he's just not able to hit anybody, that everything's skipping, nothing's on time. And it's wild because when you saw him at Ohio State, fine. Do guys bust all the time? Yes, absolutely. But there was nothing, I don't think, when you saw him play at Ohio State that would make you say, oh, well, that guy's going to be Tim Tebow-like bottom of the barrel passer. Like there was, I didn't see
a much better arm, like, for starters.
Like, I feel like those kind of guys that exist in the NFL, you saw it at college that guy can't throw, and you were hoping it would click at the NFL, and it didn't. Fields never showed that he was completely incapable of throwing a football like has been the case at the NFL. It's bizarre. He has regressed as a passer almost, it feels like, since he left Ohio State. But Justin Fields doesn't look like a great situation so far for him in Pittsburgh. Maybe that's why Russell Wilson was like, yeah, bring him on. I don't care. I'm not threatened by him. Sure, I can handle Justin Fields over the Steelers. All right, last note here. The Baltimore Ravens are getting rave reviews.
Okay, Chuck, yeah, okay.
In the social media sphere. And I don't think I'm a fan. Ryan, you can put up the picture now. This is the alternate helmet that the Baltimore Ravens are going to be wearing at times next year. So the typical helmet is, it's like a black one with a profile view of a slick, slender Ravens head. And on the back of it, it's a B on the back of their head. But it's a nice looking helmet. I like this. This is purple. This is like a shade lighter of purple now for those listening. Not
I do like the shade of purple.
It's like a shade lighter purple than the Vikings. But this, man, this looks like a just beaten down mother of four that just woke up to her kids screaming. That's what this Raven looks like. And just looks frazzled. And here's the biggest issue I have with it. And this is probably where my own weird brain is more to blame than the Baltimore Ravens. I don't like that this is this will be the only logo, I believe, in the NFL, Chop, that the face is for. It's not a profile view. It is a front-facing logo.
Oh,
now you have,
yeah.
Back in the day, you had the Buccaneers with the sword through the mouth, like through the teeth that they were holding.
The Jaguars is kind of at an angle.
The Texans is kind of at an angle too, but either way, it's not face forward. And so you've got some others like the Raiders where it is, but the Raiders is on an emblem. So to me, it's different. This
it's
one,
not an animal face.
I can't. This reminds me of RJ Ochoa from Blogging the Boys. I can't remember which helmet it was, but he has some issue with one helmet where it's the only bird helmet or something where the face faces the opposite way. Everybody else has it going a certain direction, and whichever team this is, I can't remember.
The Eagles?
Seahawks or somebody. Yeah, one of them has it facing the wrong direction compared to every other team in the NFL. This is similarly something that my stupid brain, I don't think I'm going to be able to work around. But I think the logo looks stupid. You said it during the break. It's very XFL looking to me.
It's very XFL looking. You know what? I just thought of it. I just noticed this. Are the Ravens the only team in the league that use a different logo at midfield than they do on their helmet?
The Browns, right?
Well, the Browns just have their helmet at midfield, right?
Is it? Is that what it is?
It's that little guy.
I feel
elf.
Like there's got to be one other one that does that. But no, I mean, that's completely possible.
Like the Cowboys star, the helmet star at midfield. I mean, just look around the league. They all do that at midfield. But the Ravens have that weird
like Maryland flag logo at midfield, this one.
Yeah.
And
the,
not
the original logo they had in 1996.
Yeah, and not the bird.
Yeah. At which I don't like. I don't like the emblem thing. But I do like the, I do love the Ravens logo. And I like this, this, give me the Ravens logo with that shade of purple, and I think we've got something.
I think we've got something.
But this here. Angry, frazzled, you know, just, you know, upset, stressed out professor looking bird, I'm not a fan of.
Yeah. All right. That's B-Lo.
The Belt.
The Belt here on 105 Through the Fan. Brett Boone joins the show at 9:20.
Booney.
And are we going to have the ultimate comeback completed in sports in the finals? Coming up next year on 105 Through the Fan.
The great Bobby Belt.
You ruined the morning show.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not. I ruined the morning show, but did Baltimore just ruin their helmets?
Oh.
I don't know. They're getting a lot of positive reviews. We'll dive into more of that here in just a second. First, Joe Burrow. Pretty good quarterback, wouldn't you say?
I think I could make an easy case. He's the second best in the league.
What would be your biggest argument against Joe Burrow, just in general, as a player? What would you say, hey, if there's something I don't love about Joe Burrow, it might be this. What would it be?
He's fragile.
He is always hurt. So much so that it's started creeping into his head a little bit. Have you ever watched the show Scrubs, Chop?
I don't want no scrubs.
No, the show Scrubs with Zach Braff. Yes. Not the TLC song. There was a line in one of the episodes where Dr. Cox blames himself for somebody getting sick and dying, and JD, the other doctor there, when he starts walking off, trying to walk off and leave his shift, he says, hey, as soon as you start blaming yourself for people's deaths, there's no coming back from that. And I think as soon as Joe Burrow or anybody else starts referencing light at the end of the tunnel,
mm-hmm,
or thinking about how fragile they are, I don't know that there's any coming back from that.
Bill Parcells would say that. He would say, the moment you think about retirement, you have to go.
Which, not that I think Joe Burrow's going to be awful next year because of this. I'm just saying this is now something that he'll have to deal with since it's clearly in the forefront of his mind. So Joe Burrow was out at Bengals minicamp last week, and the injuries have just piled up. You know, he had torn ligaments in his right wrist at the end of 2023. We know he's had the knee injury. There have been other times he had that calf, you remember. And then I think he had a knee issue in training camp last year. So he was asked about the injuries piling up, and this is what he said. He said, whenever the injuries start to stack up, your football mortality kind of comes into the back of your mind. So that's definitely something I've thought about and something I have had to fight through.
Okay, so is he saying football mortality in the, like, my career being over, or the football mortality in that I'm human and this is just part of my career where I'm just going to be hurt all the time?
No, I think it's more the mortality of, like,
the end is near.
We're talking about football. Like, basically what he's saying to me is football death, like the end of football. And when the injuries start stacking up, you become aware of, hey, there's a limit on how long you can do this. And
right,
boy, I would be a little concerned.
He's been paid, right?
He got paid. Not anything that would make me not want to give Joe Burrow another contract or anything like that. But it would just make me a little bit like, man, he's acknowledging he's actively having to push back thoughts of like basically disaster scenario thoughts in his head.
Dude, could you imagine being the Cincinnati Bengals and you were so bad for so long?
Yep.
And you fall back into Joe Burrow. He falls right into your lap.
Yep.
Into Joe Burrow. Into the next Tom Brady. Into Joe Cool, man, the guy who is a gamer. The only guy that has shown any consistency in being able to beat Patrick Mahomes. The only guy.
Burrowhead, they call it.
Stay healthy.
Yeah,
he may quit after one contract.
You end up getting the quarterback version of Terrell Davis, potentially.
God.
That would just be brutal for them.
Now, what an existence.
He says they're doing things to manage his injuries, doing different things to try and...
What, keep him off the field?
I mean, look, you got to a point. If he gets hurt this year, you're talking about him in a similar vein, I would think, in Cincinnati that you talk about Sean Lee in Dallas.
Sean Lee, Kawhi Leonard, something like that. Right? Somebody always hurt. Always Greg Oden, Bill Walton.
So just
he's Bill Walton.
Yeah.
He's always hurt.
Just the fact that this is in his head and he's actively thinking about it, I would just be a little concerned in Cincinnati. Not that there's anything like, well, we've got to move on from this guy. It's just I would be concerned that that's going to impact him and his thought process and his approach moving forward. Speaking of thought processes.
And I wonder if every player in the NFL, it's maybe not the quarterback position, but like I'm sure like running backs all think about, I mean, because they're fully aware that this next carry could be their last, right?
Yeah, whereas quarterbacks, maybe they're not as aware of it, especially in the era of Brady, Rodgers, Manning, guys who are playing 40. Up to 40.
Yeah.
And whereas running back, you're Jimi Hendrix, you're Janis Joplin, you're in the 27 club.
God.
You know, that's where you end up going.
And Peyton, that is.
Dude, we explained this to you 2 weeks ago. Listen, the first time.
Thank you, Sean.
Man. He's spicy.
We've built
Peyton is spicy.
We have created a bitter employee.
Yes,
here.
We have.
We took an innocent child and turned him into Carter Freeman, man. All right. Justin Fields is turning heads out there in Pittsburgh, baby.
Really?
Yeah.
I said it. He should start.
And by
he
that,
should be
I mean,
their starter.
They're turning their heads and vomiting on the sideline after watching him throw.
No, I was wrong. I didn't say that. Reports
out of Pittsburgh are that, and Justin Fields had a big time fan, a big time admirer in Ray Fittipaldo, who is a Steelers insider, Steelers reporter. And he had said, man, I thought that a lot of the issues were overblown. And, you know, he was going to come in here and this was going to be a good situation for him. Not that it still can't be, but he said, watching him in minicamp, man, it's worse than they said.
Really?
He said it's worse than people had presented. The accuracy issues. He says that he's just not able to hit anybody. That everything's skipping. Nothing's on time. And it's wild because when you saw him at Ohio State, fine. Do guys bust all the time? Yes, absolutely. But there was nothing, I don't think, when you saw him play at Ohio State that would make you say, oh, well, that guy's going to be Tim Tebow-like bottom-of-the-barrel passer. Like, there was... He had
a much better arm, like, for starters.
Like, I feel like those kind of guys that exist in the NFL, you saw it at college that guy can't throw, and you were hoping it would click at the NFL, and it didn't. Fields never showed that he was completely incapable of throwing a football like has been the case at the NFL. It's bizarre. He has regressed as a passer almost, it feels like, since he left Ohio State. But Justin Fields doesn't look like a great situation so far for him in Pittsburgh. Maybe that's why Russell Wilson was like, yeah, bring him on. I don't care. I'm not threatened by him. Sure, I can handle Justin Fields over the Steelers. All right, last note here. The Baltimore Ravens are getting rave reviews.
Okay,
Chuck,
yeah, okay.
In the social media sphere. And I don't think I'm a fan. Ryan, you can put up the picture now. This is the alternate helmet that the Baltimore Ravens are going to be wearing at times next year. So the typical helmet is, it's like a black one with a profile view of a slick, slender Ravens head. And on the back of it, it's a B on the back of their head. But it's a nice looking helmet. I like this. This is purple. This is like a shade lighter of purple now for those listening.
I do like the shade of purple.
It's like a shade lighter purple, yeah, than the Vikings. But this, man, this looks like a just beaten down mother of four that just woke up to her kids screaming. That's what this Raven looks like. And just looks frazzled. And here's the biggest issue I have with it. And this is probably where my own weird brain is more to blame than the Baltimore Ravens. I don't like that this is this will be the only logo, I believe, in the NFL, Chop, that the face is for, it's not a profile view. It is a front-facing logo.
Oh,
now you have,
yeah.
Back in the day, you had the Buccaneers with the sword through the mouth, like through the teeth that they were holding.
The Jaguars is kind of at an angle.
The Texans is kind of at an angle too, but either way, it's not face forward. And so you've got some others like the Raiders, where it is, but the Raiders is on an emblem. So to me, right. It's different. This one,
it's not an animal face.
I can't. This reminds me of RJ Ochoa from Blogging the Boys. I can't remember which helmet it was, but he has some issue with one helmet where it's the only bird helmet or something where the face faces the opposite way. Everybody else has it going a certain direction, and whichever team this is, I can't remember.
The Eagles?
Seahawks or somebody. Yeah, one of them has it facing the wrong direction compared to every other team in the NFL. This is similarly something that my stupid brain, I don't think I'm going to be able to work around. But I think the logo looks stupid. You said it during the break. It's very XFL looking to me.
It's very XFL looking. You know what? I just thought of it. I just noticed this. Are the Ravens the only team in the league that use a different logo at midfield than they do on their helmet?
The Browns, right?
Well, the Browns just have their helmet at midfield, right?
Is it? Is that what it is?
Sometimes it's that little guy.
I feel like there's got to be one other one that does that. But no, I mean, that's completely possible.
The Cowboys star, the helmet star at midfield. I mean, just look around the league. They all do that at midfield. But the Ravens have that weird, like, Maryland flag logo at midfield, this one.
Yeah.
And
the original logo they had in 1996.
Yeah, and not the bird.
Yeah. Which I don't like. I don't like the emblem thing. But I do like I do love the Ravens logo. And I like this. Give me the Ravens logo with that shade of purple, and I think we've got something.
I think we've got something.
But this angry, frazzled, upset, stressed out professor looking bird, I'm not a fan of.
Yeah. All right. That's B-Lo.
The Belt.
The Belt here on 105 Through the Fan. Brett Boone joins the show at 9:20.
Booney.
And are we going to have the ultimate comeback completed in sports in the finals? Coming up next year on 105 Through the Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.